ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm speaking with Melissa Grego, founder of Melink, a consulting practice specializing in conference and event production and editorial content creation. Its mission is to connect, inform, and empower the entertainment, media, and tech community and promote gender equality within it. In her previous position as the first female editor-in-chief of leading TV industry publication, Broadcasting and Cable, she also created Keynotes and Cocktails, a conference series featuring and connecting women working in media and entertainment. She continues to collaborate with Broadcasting and Cable as executive producer of the Next TV Summit and Expo, a high-level, future-focused executive conference providing insights into the impact of new video devices, delivery systems, and consumer expectations in the OTT and on-demand era. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to have you be here.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Lots to talk about. Lots. First off, you're the founder of Melink. Am I pronouncing that right?
Melink.
And can you tell us a little bit, for listeners who aren't aware about your company, tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the name of the company is intended to be a little bit of a play on words. So Mel is short for Melissa, and I sometimes go by Mel. And it's designed to be, you know, a link among people and a link to information and resources to, you know, inform, inspire, and empower people working in media, entertainment, and tech. So there you have it, Melink. But it's a consulting practice I launched in March 2015, really in an attempt to essentially be of service to the industry I covered and loved for so many years, with the network and knowledge base that I developed over that time. So I specialize in conference and event production in the media and entertainment space for both large-scale executive conferences as well as, you know, all the way down to more intimate single-panel activities. We can handle everything from concept and creation to curating the program, the speaker lineup, and even at this point, we're able to provide marketing and registration, attendee relations, and how to develop partners and sponsors around those. And that's largely based on my experience having acquired the Keynotes and Cocktails conference series for women from my former employer, Broadcasting and Cable, and presenting those conferences myself through Melink last year in LA and New York. So I had created those when I was an editor there at BNC and produced them for them when I launched the company, and then I acquired them and put them on myself last year. Well, not myself, myself and a whole group of us. It was my company. So we have those owned and operated tentpole conferences and, you know, working on some smaller salon style events. And I've just started a small Founders Favorites event series, which are sort of just smaller free networking activities around town with partners I'm a personal fan of. So we did one with Barboza Method, which is created by Stephanie Barboza. She does a unique style of fitness. So we had a group of people there for a free workout and networking event. And then I produced the Next TV Summit for New Bay Media, which owns BNC, so my former employer again. Okay. And then we do a little bit of consulting, you know, in the area of strategic business introductions and stuff like that.
Oh, wow. Very multi. And you would also, on the website, you mention promoting gender equality in the media industry. And how big a piece of that, is that just filtered into everything you do, or is that a central tenet of what you're marketing to folks?
I mean, I think it's part of my approach to everything. I think everything that I do and we try to do as a company is to take an innovative entrepreneurial mindset to things, as well as really keeping diversity and inclusion top of mind. All of those, not just because they're the right thing to do, but because they're a good business. But, you know, forming MeLink was essentially formalizing something that was organically happening in my career, having, you know, covered TV and media for many years, developing this sort of network and knowledge base and seeing the opportunity, I think, for growth and impact in the area of equality and diversity was just something that was growing as my sort of profile and career and opportunities grew. There was more opportunity for me to have impact in that area. And then, you know, once we had launched the Keynotes and Cocktails Conference, we saw pretty neat things happening. And so it's sort of just all been informed from that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the format of Keynotes and Cocktails is modeled off of the conversations I began to have as I grew and I ran into things that were new to me, but I knew they weren't new in general. So, you know, I kind of had access to some really amazing, accomplished people as a journalist. Right. And I started just asking questions, you know, did they run into this before? And I would get a bunch of answers. It was kind of like reporting out my career, applying journalism to, you know, what should Melissa do? And, you know, I would get all these different takes on things. And of course, my gut that it wasn't just me, that things had happened to people before similarly. And then I would, you know, find an approach that worked for me. And that's really what I wanted to do with these events. And that's what I'm really doing with this work in everything. So long answer to a short question, but really the idea is to, you know, find ways to share information, connect people with resources that they can use to thrive in their career. And if that promotes diversity and inclusion and equality,
all the better.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you get Lauren Zelaznik's newsletter. Do you get her newsletter?
I do.
And a few weeks ago, she mentioned how she had chosen not to participate in a conference because she would have been the token woman.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an interesting thing, you know. And on the one hand, you don't want to be the token. You don't want to give them a pass. But is that the right approach? Should she have reached back to the young woman who reached out to her and said, I see I'm the only woman. Can I help you get other women? I mean, what do you think as a woman who is organizing these conferences, it isn't always easy to source the profile women because there aren't women in profile positions, you know, thick on the ground. It's not always easy to source it. How do you go about creating an inclusive, diverse, and I'm not only speaking about women, I'm talking about racial diversity.
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? How do you create a balanced conference?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, what I would say is, you know, Lauren, I highly respect her choices and her approach to that. I understand it. I always say I'm not going to single-handedly solve all of the equality problems, but I can do what I can do. And I really like, Gabriella, what you were saying, your suggestion to go back and say, hey, you know, I do see that I'm the only one here. Can I help you? And I hear that a lot, you know, and I ask for that help a lot. That's one of the things that I do as a conference producer. And that's one of the ways, you know, what I do in all of this work, connecting people and building community and building a network, you know, it all feeds into each other. So, right. You know, sometimes I'm requesting a speaker for Next TV. They're not available on that date in that location. So I'll say, hey, can you speak at Women of the West or Women of New York or, you know, vice versa, you know, and I get to know people doing all these different things. And it's just a matter of hustling and networking myself and asking for help. I think that's a huge thing and having the conversation. And I think we could all be served by not being as timid about the conversation. I think it's been in recent years, it's been sort of like almost people saying it's almost like you're shamed into the conversation. Like it's the, you know, people aren't comfortable with the conversation. I think it's about being more direct. I mean, we just put out, you know, a call for speakers. And
why I know
we really want to have as inclusive a lineup as possible. I have that conversation with every person I talk to. So I will, you know, talk to a contact PR person for a company about all of the events that we have going. And they know now when they're talking to me, as you know, we are always looking for, you know, women, people of color, people of different perspectives. We want different companies, different parts of the industry, you know, different perspectives in all respects. And I think that serves everybody. So part of it is talking about it. Part of it is just looking for people and looking beyond who's listed and who's pitched. Because I will tell you, if I just stuck with who I was pitched, 9 out of 10 speakers would be straight white men.
Of course. Of course. This is what we find. And it's interesting, even though this interview will air in June, right now we're kicking off Women's Month. And the cover of The Hollywood Reporter, I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah.
It's all guys.
Yeah.
It's great. And doing interesting things. And yet you can't help but think you're re-envisioning digital, and on your leadership team, you have precisely zero women. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? You know, do women just not have a voice in digital? Are they not? I mean, one of the things that I find interesting, I do a lot of research around young millennial content consumption and behaviors. And we're starting to see some differences in media consumption, because now anytime you're having a poll, you know, how people discoverability, how it works, it's actually there are some gender differences. And being aware of those gender differences will help you market better, push your content better, have more brand recognition tying back between programs to larger network brands. And to just have no representation of the woman's voice in the conversation is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, the business case is so clear. You know, it's not just about the right thing to do. It's the right thing for your business. There are statistics. We've got a whole page on our website laying out, like, here are the numbers that will show you your company will perform better the more balanced and diverse it is and the more inclusive it is. But I think sometimes we have to experience, talk about, think about, and see diversity in action. And I would say, it's, you know, numbers aside, you know, I think the concept of valuing diversity, for me, it's something that just has kind of been part of my perspective, probably because I'm a journalist, right? So I started grasping it because any story or analysis you look to assemble needs a variety of perspectives. You can't get the whole picture with just one perspective. And if everybody looks at things similarly to the way that you do, you're not going to get the picture. You're not going to know what's really going on. And it's not necessarily comfortable to invite somebody to challenge you, you know, because we all want to feel like brilliant, you know, oh my gosh, I have the most innovative, amazing idea. That feels great. But, you know, it feels greater to actually have something
robust that works.
And, you know, I have somebody who works with me on a lot of Mellink stuff, and she's a woman, she's around my age, but we, you know, grew up in different parts of this country. She's different, you know, race, ethnicity, religion, background, different, came up through a different part of the industry. And she challenges me constantly. And sometimes it's really annoying. I'm like, you know what, can't we just be like, yeah, this is great. And it's better. It's better because, you know, I'm like, I'm curious. Well, maybe she's right. And so, and, you know, a lot of times she is, or we find another solution, and it just reinforces for me the value of it. And so I can feel, you know, the benefit of it. And it kind of keeps me motivated, you know, having different perspectives.
Well, but, sure. An idea that's been put through its paces is always going to be more robust anyway. You know, it just is, because you've pushed it, you've pulled it, you've tested it. And it could be that she has a different perspective and you bang it around a bit and you still end up landing where you started, but you know, it could survive the bang, you know?
Yeah. That's the visibility thing is an interesting topic where I think I might see things a little differently than some of my counterparts who are, you know, dedicated to promoting equality and inclusion. And that's that this notion of you have to see it to be it. I don't necessarily agree with that. I do obviously think we need diversity of people across the board, you know, from, you know, at all levels. And don't get me wrong, it's very valuable to be in a high profile position. It's valuable to anybody that, you know, I put on a panel. That that brings them exposure. It brings them contacts, brings them business. So, you know, whoever is in those positions, they benefit from it. But I don't think I necessarily have to, or anybody necessarily has to see somebody who looks exactly like them, who is exactly like them in the role that they want to get that role. Obviously, there was no female editor-in-chief before I was the editor-in-chief of BNC. When I was a young, before I was a reporter, I sat across the wall from the Bank of Reporters. I was working at the Hollywood Reporter at the time, and I think there were maybe a dozen reporters. I think maybe one or two of them were female, but it wasn't that I saw that there were females there. It was that I saw, I heard what they were doing, what they were saying on the phone, how they were operating. And I thought, I want to do that. I can do that. I'm interested in that. That's exciting to me. So I think, I guess I see that a little bit differently. And it's not to devalue having women and people of color and diverse people in visible positions. But I think that's an interesting thing to look at, because sometimes we just get caught up in these catchphrases and rather than the actual tactical, like, what can you actually do?
Well, that's actually the thing that I find the tricky thing with being interested. It's precisely that, is that I went to a Wired business conference and they had the woman from Pinterest, the lead engineer, Pinterest, lead engineer, yeah, fantastic, happens to be a woman. I wanted to hear what she had to say. But what they had her there for was to talk about women in tech. And I was so sort of disappointed that was what they chose. I wanted to hear what she had to say about where they were going, how they were planning. Were they doing discrete things for mobile versus other platform? Those things. What I wanted to see was somebody being an expert in tech who happened to be a woman. I didn't want to just see her. And I think she does those things. I was just disappointed that the conference chose to have her talk about this other thing. And in fact, it's because she had written an article, because she had started keeping track of it, and that was what got her attention. And I think, what I found interesting or frustrating is occasionally I've written the odd little piece about feminism, and those have gotten more response than, let's say, my article on millennials or what have you. But I don't want to slide into that. I don't want to focus on the women angle, because I don't want to be ghettoed into that. That's not what I'm about. I happen to be a woman, but I think these other things.
Yeah, I think I would agree with everything that you just said.
Fantastic.
But it's tricky though. I mean, I appreciate the dialogue and the conversation being there. Right. But at the same time, yeah, I agree. I would just like to see her just doing a keynote on, or a big Q&A, or being alongside other really senior people.
Talking about the tech.
Talking about the business. Yeah. That said, I mean, there are conversations to be had, like you mentioned, on content search and discovery, which is a big topic that I see, coming down the pike. It's going to be more important than ever. We've got only more apps and outlets and that we're going to see, and how different consumers access things, and based on their cultural or their various touch points, and I'm sure you have much more insight into that. But I think that's where it's appropriate to have that conversation. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a woman to talk about trends and female consumers. It just should be somebody who's tracking that.
Well, sure. And part of it, it's not just, of course, the women, because you could also say, and boys, what are boys doing, and how are they doing it, and what does this mean, and how successful are we? Key as these things somewhat bifurcate, and they may come back together again. It's just at this, if we think of what television used to be in such a push medium and such a limited medium, while you may have had a female campaign cell or a male cell or a general cell for your spot, where you put it and how you programmed that spot wasn't going to be different. Whereas now there are ways in which you could tweak it to be more effective, to have more impact for where you're putting it. And because precisely there are so many outlets, we're in such an attention economy. Everybody's competing for attention, And to that point, you plan conferences. has the bar raised for what the conference needs to be? And how have you felt, you know, as there's been disruption in the media landscape, a lot of people are looking to build additional revenue streams. One of the ways that some companies, content companies, are building revenue streams is through conferences. So there seem like there are more of them. How has that competitive landscape changed? And how are you meeting that challenge? And what are the things that you think set conferences apart?
Great questions. So I think, yes, it's more competitive. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It spurs us all on to do better and innovate always. And there are things, sure, that we certainly try to do to set things apart. I think there's just a certain level of production you've got to have, you know, have things run on time and seamlessly. And just that level, people are going to so many, just got to have that nailed down. But I think more than anything, it's about your network. You know, you're there really to drive your business. You know, if you're going to spend the day away from your office, you need to be able to continue to keep things going. So you have time to, you know, break and catch up on your calls, you know, have a couple of calls, catch up on your emails, but then also have ways to facilitate those contacts while you're there, while you're spending your money and your time being there. So, you know, we work on different ways to provide new networking features and based around sort of a curation. In a way, it's sort of applying what we're seeing in the media business to the experience, which is to say, you know, we all have been to conferences where there's, you know, 12 people there who could really benefit your business. Good luck finding them among the 300 or 400 people who are there. So you know, we've been doing things the last couple of years as far as organizing conversations around topics. And then this year we're rolling out a way to get in touch with people who were there with a contact list, so which is opt in, and I think that's really valuable. And also, you know, the speakers, because a lot of times they come, there's a certain amount of access, because, you know, otherwise you're not going to be in the same room as this person and hearing what they have to say about the future of business or take questions. But you know, finding ways to provide access to them as well is something that we've been working on.
How receptive are our speakers and those 12 people? I mean, because oftentimes they can feel a bit hunted, you know, that maybe having, you know, they are the 12 and the other people at the conference, the multitude, the mass all want the 12. You know, how can they, maybe they're interested in some of the people, but not all of the people. How can that be manipulated? And then also, how do you promote these new things that you are doing to potential attendees so they understand this isn't going to be your typical, like, how do you market and highlight that you are making these innovations, which are absolutely critical?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, to take the first question first, I guess part of it is curating and producing and programming a conference and getting speakers does come down to relationships and track records and trust. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just, hey, we're going to have 400 people here and we're going to be talking about this and you should be there. It's, I'm calling you and you know that it's been a good experience in the past. And that's why we work, you know, I work really hard to make sure that we don't, you know, break promises and trust. And if they agree to something, great. If they don't, you know, we respect that. Right. I think that's a big part of it. The response so far is generally that, you know, if people are participating in these things, they're part of this industry and they do want to be innovating and they do want to be meeting with people. Right. And so far I feel optimistic about being able to really provide that. And it's not necessarily that people are going to give their personal email, but it, you know, if we're able to provide a way for someone to follow up and say, I heard you speak and know that it's going to, you know, land in their general vicinity. Right. And someone's going to look at it. I think people are open to that. That's why we're trying to, you know, get together at these conferences. That's why people are there. You know, more than anything, I've found people are, they'll take off after they speak because they've got to be somewhere. I mean, the higher level person that you're going to get, the more in demand their time is. Right. So it's not like necessarily, I think it's easy to think, oh, it's because they don't want to be there. It's like, no, they're running a humongous company and they've got other stuff to do. So, yeah. I will say on the women's conferences, it's a bit different. You know, what I do is different. Our format is distinct in that it's off the record. You know, we do interviews on camera afterward separately with speakers, and we produce content based on that. But the experience itself is different in that respect. You know, so the quality of conversation is different. It's trusted. We have a tradition. People abide by it. And it's a nice relief to take a break from the pursuit of the retweet. You know, you're not sitting there, oh, I got to tweet this out. This was so, you know, and then people don't worry about speaking in sound bites. They just speak about what they have to say. We've gotten really good feedback about that.
Right.
As far as marketing it, I think, it's just all of the things that we do to market, and it's just picking, you know, knowing which things we think would be a draw, what's of value to people. And then, you know, we make sure it's in your inbox and on your social media feeds and all of that. It's all hand in hand. You know, when you know what people value, you try to provide that. So you want seamless experience. You want the people there who people want to be among, who they want to hear from, and then, you know, provide ways for them to actually engage with them and not just feel like they're sitting there being talked at. So,
right. Is there a particular thing that you get incredibly excited about that's on the horizon in the entertainment field that you think is going to sort of explode and be big?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things. You know, what we were just talking about, content, search, and discovery. I think that and the way we experience content is going to be really interesting to watch. You know, with 455 scripted original shows on the air in 2016, no human is individually wading through all of that. You know, it'll be really interesting. And then, you know, you look at all the different apps and everything. I think when you look at, you know, the evolution of the landscape in terms of how will people find content, you know, you still need it to be curated. Is that going to be, you know, you put in a search, is it going to be associated with a brand? Is it going to be associated with a programming brand or with your individual community? I think it's exciting to see what's going to come from that. I'm also, you know, back to the whole equality thing, I think I'm excited to see how business leaders and individuals learn how to really take that to heart and as a cause, and really understand that it's beneficial to every single person and every single company to prioritize a diverse, inclusive talent pool and workforce. You know, it's exciting when I see somebody like, you know, John Landgraf from FX Networks, like laying down the law and saying, this is a priority and I'm measuring success here in terms of diversifying who's writing, directing, producing, starring in, gaffing, whatever, you know, our productions and executives. And, you know, it's right. Cool to see that there's results of that and people taking leadership positions as companies and as business leaders, but then, you know, the opportunity for us to all do that on an individual level too, and stepping out of our comfort zone and inviting challenging perspectives and different perspectives from our own. It's just great stuff can come from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have burned through our time with you. But before we totally wrap, there's a thing I like to do with folks, which is just go through a few words and get your top of mind first response. So no thinking, just knee-jerk reactions. Are you ready?
Oh, God. Okay. This is one of my tricks. I'm like, now the tables have turned.
Okay. It's easy. You'll be great. Facebook.
Oh, too much Donald Trump. Oh, my God.
Google.
Oh, gosh. I'm stinking at this. Google. Search.
That's fine. Snapchat.
Oh, God. How do I find the stinking filters? I got to figure that out.
Twitter.
News.
YouTube.
Power.
Ad blockers.
Tricky.
Art.
Essential.
VR.
The future.
AR.
Really the future.
And then AI.
You know, it's funny. I was going to say VR, AR, MR, AI. To me, that's the other thing that's going to be really interesting to see, the whole experiential entertainment. I think a lot of it is going to be more applicable than anything to enterprise business, you know, than entertainment necessarily. But the notion of co-viewing, how people are viewing and wearing things and interacting, I think is probably one of the more exciting things to see how it develops, and the business models around them, of course.
Yeah. I think the thing that I've lately become completely entranced by is the power and potential of blockchain. That's my new thing. Oh yeah. Very, okay.
Well, I'll have to follow
it. I'll email you about that.
Yes, please.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us. I really have enjoyed our conversation. It's been lots of fun.
Entirely. Thank you so much for having me.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. A big thank you to our guest, Melissa Greco. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week right here on Up Next.